Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut joins us now for his thoughts on what the U.S. should do in Syria. We'll also, though, ask him about a couple of more local things, like his bill to do more to prevent tick-borne diseases, with Lyme disease and others apparently rising in our area, and the future of Plum Island and some of the mysterious animal experiments that have gone on there. Senator Blumenthal, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be with you again. Thank you for having me.
So you're a Democratic member of the Armed Services Committee. You've said we need to act in Syria, and you would support airstrikes of limited duration and scope. Could the president do that with or without congressional approval?
There are a number of conditions, in my view, that have to be met before any military action of any kind should be undertaken. One of those conditions is consultation, at the very least, with Congress, which has not happened so far, and perhaps a vote by Congress, if possible. The pressures of time and military action on the ground, if Assad is threatening to use chemical weapons again, may enable the president to go forward without a vote by Congress. The War Powers Act gives him authority to do so as long as he notifies Congress within 48 hours, and then a vote is mandatory within 60 days. But really, ideally, there should be a vote by Congress. At the very least, there has to be greater consultation with Congress than there has been already. And another condition that has to be met is a coalition of international partners, not only European allies, but hopefully some of the Arab states as well, supporting such a measure. And then the measure has to be very limited if it's undertaken, extraordinarily precise and proportionate, limited to military assets, high-value military assets that are in some way related to the use of chemical weapons, the means of transport, and the kinds of execution, transport, infrastructure methods that are involved, as well as other high-level military assets. So I think the administration still has to satisfy some conditions before any military action is undertaken. And, you know, it goes without saying, because others have said it, I've said it, there should be no prolonged involvement and absolutely no troops, American troops involved.
You parted ways on this with your fellow senator from Connecticut, Chris Murphy, who seems to be one of the most vocal opponents of an airstrike. He says it would just stir up anti-American sentiment in the region and provoke more repression by the Syrian government of its people, and that could lead to a quagmire. What do you say to that concern?
I agree that the military action, if it's undertaken, has to be only after consultation with Congress, which has not been done. We agree there. We also agree that there are serious potential consequences that have to be taken into account. And at the end of the day, the judgment may be made that the potential ramifications or repercussions are not worth the dangers, especially if we cannot muster an international coalition to join us, as we did in Libya. But I'm also concerned about the repercussions of not acting and thereby emboldening the Assad regime to commit another crime against humanity. Obviously, there have been many crimes against humanity in Syria, but this one is prohibited by international law clearly and unequivocally. If the evidence is there, and I stress again, we've not seen the evidence that links these chemical weapons use with Assad, then we ought to at least consider the use of a very precise and military-directed action, probably the Tomahawk missiles, to deter another use of chemical warfare by Assad.
The president seems to be dampening expectations that the evidence will be very clear as opposed to circumstantial. How good must the evidence be for you to land firmly on the side of a strike?
It has to be clear and convincing. You know, that's a standard of law that I applied as Attorney General for 20 years, as a prosecutor, as a lawyer, clear and convincing evidence is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, but it is certainly very strong as a threshold to overcome.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, with us on WNYC. And okay, let's change the topic entirely and talk about tick-borne diseases. Everyone's heard of Lyme disease, I feel like, this summer more than ever. The CDC estimates there are 300,000 cases per year in the U.S. Is it just our imaginations, or is Lyme disease becoming a bigger problem? I know you've introduced a bill with respect to this. Is something happening that causes you to take action now?
It's becoming a bigger problem. I hesitate to use the word epidemic because it is so often used colloquially, but it is certainly reaching epidemic proportions, and it's bigger even than it has been reported. In fact, the estimate is that only about 10% of Lyme cases are reported. So 30,000 reported would mean that there are really 300,000, perhaps more, across the country, obviously concentrated in terms of reporting in the Northeast, which is why the Northeastern senators have all joined in the bill that I've offered, which essentially would support more research, diagnostic tools, and the kind of involvement of Lyme patients at the table on an advisory committee that so far has not occurred. You know, Lyme is so easily confused with other conditions, whether fatigue or flu initially, and the red blotch, that the circular bullseye that often is associated with a Lyme infection, sometimes is missing. So diagnosis is a big problem. And to answer your question very directly, we don't know exactly how far and wide and deeply Lyme has spread as a very pernicious and insidious problem in our population.
And not to mention the disease called Powassan disease, which is also tick-borne and which is said to be worse than Lyme, though more rare. It kills 10% of its victims. It leaves half the survivors with permanent neurological damage, from what I've read. But only 15 cases of this rare disease have been found in New York in the last 9 years, but there's no treatment. But yet it's another tick-borne disease that people are becoming very concerned about. Your bill, as I understand it, would establish an advisory committee in the Department of Health and Human Services to focus on Lyme and other tick-borne diseases, and that there needs to be a three-prong approach, controlling the deer and rodent population and figuring out how to kill the ticks without killing everything else, and then developing new tests and treatments?
Exactly right. You know, it really has to be a multifaceted approach. First of all, striking through prevention and awareness so that people wear better clothing, use repellent, look for ticks after they've been in the woods or high ground, and particularly with children, inspecting children. We have four children, and we made it a practice whenever they came in at the end of the day, we look for ticks, and we found some, and then we had them tested. And if they were tested positive, then we had the use of antibiotics, which works as long as it's used promptly. The second prong obviously has to be going after the ticks themselves, and we need to develop better methods of doing so in terms of the science here, and of course the use of methods of better prevention of the spread from ticks to animals and vice versa. So the ecology of this problem needs to be addressed. But there's also the medicine. And I just want to stress here that my mantra as a public official has always been consistently and constantly, decisions about medical treatment should be made by the doctors, not by politicians, not by insurance companies. They ought to be made by the docs and the patients. And that relationship is really a sacred one and profoundly significant. And that's where the decision-making ought to be. So, and the point of the bill is simply to enable more research, better diagnosis, and support for treatment through that advisory committee and monetary support for the NIH and other scientific organizations. I want to give a shout-out to Senator Schumer, who's focused on a number of these tick-borne diseases. and our colleague, Senator Gillibrand, who has really been a champion, a very consistent leader in this area.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, with us. And we just have a couple of minutes left for one more topic, somewhat related, Plum Island. And for people who don't know, this is an island near Connecticut, but off the northern coast of Long Island, part of New York. It's owned by the federal government. It used to be a military installation, and since the 1950s, it's been the home of the Plum Island Animal Disease Center, operated by the Department of Homeland Security. Apparently, they have all kinds of live viruses there, foot and mouth, polio, cholera, and now, of all things, the federal government wants to sell the island to a private developer. I know you took a boat trip to Plum Island last week. There seems to be some news today about a zoning ordinance passed by the town board in Southold. They want to develop condos there. Is this something you're for or against? And is it a moot point after the zoning got passed?
I oppose development for residential or commercial purposes of Plum Island. We're talking about 843 acres of undeveloped, pristine property now belonging to the federal government in the middle of Long Island Sound. Think of it for a moment. In the middle of one of the most densely populated areas in the world, we have this island which could be preserved as open space, now is used as habitat by all kinds of wildlife, including a lot of birds. We were out there with the Audubon Society, the Nature Conservancy.
So you want it as kind of a nature preserve. Forgive me for jumping in, but we just have 45 seconds. You took a boat trip to the island last week, but I understand you were prevented from stepping foot on the island. Why so secretive?
Well, they conduct a lot of secret research there, which they're now talking about transferring out to Kansas at a cost of billions of dollars. And my point, and we could talk for hours, or at least a few more minutes, is that we have this preserve that we would be fighting to buy if it didn't already belong to the federal government. Let's not sell it for commercial and residential development. Let's let human beings use the beautiful beaches out there, wildlife use the habitat and ecology that should not be sacrificed.
Thank you, Senator Blumenthal, for talking about everything from Syria to Lyme disease to nature on Plum Island. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very, very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.